The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors? Not just across town, but across the country. How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Global Reach, the show that helps your firm find opportunities, manage risk, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. So a multinational European energy company was the victim of a fraudulent email asset diversion scheme. It resulted in the theft of more than $30 million. A Dubai financial institution was interested in investing in an Eastern European property development firm, but could they trust their prospective partner? A U.S.-based company was seeking an influential partner to guide their entry into the Moroccan market. They were working with an individual who turned out to be a member of the Moroccan royal family. Could they work with him without running afoul of the U.S. Corrupt Business Practices Act? I don't know, cyber attacks, reputation trolls, Snowden wannabes. Protecting our companies from internal and external threats today is an unfortunate necessity of working in the global economy. In addition to cyber criminals and disgruntled employees, international markets are plagued with disputed transparency, material misrepresentations, and corruption. Due diligence has never been more challenging. So how do we get the actionable intelligence that we need? Well, a touch of global clandestine experience couldn't hurt, and that's what my guests bring this week in the battle against cyber threats and other forms of corruption in our efforts to mitigate investment, brand, and reputational risk. Joining Global Reach Winning in World Markets today are former NCIS Special Agent and Intelligence Case Officer, Mark Johnson. He's the CEO of the brand new Sovereign Intelligence LLC, a company that was founded by elite intelligence officers with global operational experience. In addition, we've got Sovereign's Director of Global Intelligence, Charles Kestenbaum. Gentlemen, welcome to Global Reach.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate your this opportunity.
Mark, you recently did a presentation on corporate espionage and global security, protecting your business interests. What were some of the key elements that you were talking about?
Well, I think everybody today is worried about protecting their own assets, whether it's global intellectual property that gets passed down through a supply chain and or communiques that are going back and forth between various partners across the globe. And everybody wants to share information to get things done, to make decisions. But what they're worried about is who else is listening. And you look at what Snowden has brought in terms of visibility and how we deal with passing information back and forth so we can make decisions, and everybody generally is concerned about espionage. And corporate espionage through many different forms is happening at a rapid pace.
So tell us about Sovereign Intelligence. What exactly is the firm?
Sure. So the firm is made up, as you mentioned eloquently, by intelligence officers and those that have been experienced in the field in the art of collecting information globally. And our position is to address equity companies, hedge fund groups, international law firms, and advisory firms by providing them very powerful and salient information and evidence of risks, whether it's doing an M&A due diligence project or dealing with Foreign Corrupt Practice Act issues. We want to be able to find information and evidence that helps our clients make better decisions. And the nuances involved with cyber, or with our company, involve two pieces of that. So you have the cyber intelligence piece, as well as the human intelligence piece. And Sovereign is uniquely positioned to be able to combine those two tool sets.
Well, there are a lot of, there are a lot of security firms. Is that different? Why is Sovereign different from them? Is it this combination of cyber intelligence and human?
Yes, so Clancy sometimes says. Yeah, so I think part of it is that there's a lot of cybersecurity firms that are very good at shoring up a company's castle, if you will, but they're not doing a very good job of getting information that is beyond them, like a ranger would going out and informing a command about things that are going on in front of an area that they're trying to protect. And what we do is we go out into different parts of the Internet to collect information, data that helps our clients make better decisions. We're not focusing on trying to solve the cybersecurity or shore up your castle theory. We believe that if there's threats of espionage, then it's probably too late by the time you find out about it at that place. So we're really trying to get out way out ahead of the game, going into some of the more nefarious places of the Internet to do that.
Well, we're going to take a deep dive into those nefarious places on the web in just a minute. But first, let me tell my guests, let me tell my audience more about my guests. Mark Johnson, in addition to his intelligence background, Mark is also an attorney. His legal, investigative, and global clandestine experience offers sophisticated clients the credibility needed for emerging market investments decisions. As an agent for the Naval Criminal Investigative Service for 10 years, Mark served as senior staff counterintelligence officer in support of the U.S. Navy Special Program. He conducted numerous sensitive intelligence operations in Asia and the Middle East. Mark received his training in Joint Counterintelligence Academy, DIA, and the CIA. He's advised the U.S. government and the private sector leadership on matters related to sovereign wealth funds, high-energy weapons, nanotechnology, financial networks, and cybersecurity, directly influencing national security policy. Now, in addition to his work with Sovereign Intelligence, Charlie Kestenbaum is the president of B&K International, a strategic intelligence and project development consulting firm that focuses on the Mideast and North Africa. He's widely recognized as one of the world's foremost experts on Middle East business. He co-founded BKI following a distinguished career as senior U.S. trade specialist in the Mideast and Africa. Charlie served 24 years in the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service at U.S. embassies throughout the Mideast and Indonesia. Since leaving government work in 2002, he's been a Middle East business consultant to Fortune 500 companies and established several security companies in Iraq. He's also been a print journalist, a TV journalist, and if he wasn't busy enough, he serves as a lecturer and teacher at the National Foreign Affairs Training Center, where he teaches classes in anti-corruption, competitiveness, and how U.S. companies operate successfully abroad. So, wow, I think it's going to be quite a show. And again, gentlemen, welcome to Global Reach Winning in World Markets.
Thank you very much.
So what is this deep, dark web you're talking about? Mark.
Yes. So part of the process that we have developed is to educate clients on what really is involved with the Internet. And when you talk about deep web, it's going to mean different things to different people. The way I have tried to define this, and I'm backed up by many, many experts along the way, is the deep web is part of the World Wide Web, which belongs under the protocol of the HTTP access into the overall Internet. And so there is a portion of the Internet which uses an on-ramp of the World Wide Web. And a part of that World Wide Web is this deep web. And according to the volume of the access and activity that goes on in that place, it's up to 95% of the volume of the World Wide Web. But that's just part of it. Okay, there's the other part, which is the 70% of the Internet, which involves the global file sharing network, which to many is another way to get onto the Internet, and that's through peer-to-peer software.
Now, you've said we should never underestimate the peer-to-peer world. What do you mean by that? And how do we use it?
Well, interestingly, anyone who's sharing movies or music through LimeWire, BearShare, BitTorrent, and other types of peer-to-peer software may be inadvertently exposing themselves to other folks within the Internet on the peer-to-peer world that are looking at and wanting to share information about whatever they're looking for. So if you were to go on and use one of these software programs within the peer-to-peer world and want to search for 1040EV, chances are very good that among the circle of the folks that are you're tapping into for peer-to-peer access, that you'd be able to pull back several 1040EZ documents of other people. And it's because it's the idea that you're sharing your My Documents folder and or a designated shared folder every time that you use peer-to-peer software.
1040EZ? Could you define that?
Yeah, so it's a tax form, right?
Oh,
so
if someone, the 1040,
yeah, so if
okay.
So if someone is saving a tax form that they have been working on hard and slaving away and putting all their numbers together and they're sharing their, you know, intimate information about their finances on a tax form, and they've saved it on their My Documents folder, and their son or daughter, whomever, is using peer-to-peer software to share movies or music, that document is exposed into the peer-to-peer world. And so I counsel clients on not underestimating the ability of other people to collect your PII information in that place. And this is where you have, obviously, all the threats to the identity theft that we see now that are coming out. It originates in the peer-to-peer world.
First question, what do we do to protect that personal information on our personal computers or on our business computers? Or do I have to have a whole separate, unconnected computer?
If you're going to do positive research in that place, I would definitely recommend a separate computer. It's really not for the lighthearted, and we can help with that. That's part of what we do in our intelligence collection. But to defend yourself against it, you need a robust, very powerful monitoring service that provides the capacity to monitor your PII in Netflix. And we can help provide that.
So for a smaller company, maybe we should just keep our old laptops and keep our personal information on those and disconnect them from the World Wide Web.
Yes, and as you have probably seen before or in the news, in recent memory, the Russians have decided to go back to using typewriters for communicate. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to do to pull yourself off of the Internet. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening with anybody.
Yeah. That's interesting. We had about a year ago, we did a show called The Big Hack Attack on China. And I know the executives that we spoke to said that when they went to China, they would bring a Virgin computer and toss it when they left, or a Virgin phone and just toss it when they left, because they were sure they were going to come back infected with some kind of spyware. So, Charlie, you've done a lot of work in emerging markets. I mean, Mideast, Indonesia, and others. How do I use the deep web to protect my company, just broadly? And then we'll go into some examples.
Well, it's very important. It's essential to understand that there's really two kinds of criminality that we're looking at here. One is criminal acts against individuals, you know, trying to access your bank account or your password and things like that on an individual basis. And then there's the much broader corporate crime where, as you mentioned, China, where the Chinese companies particularly attack or Russian companies and others try to attack and access U.S. companies to access their technology, their proprietary data and information. And so the necessity of how you respond to each is quite different in terms of establishing a protective regime, which I will let Mark give more detail on the actual how you set up a protective regime as a corporation.
And part of that
hold that thought, because I just got signaled by the network. We've got to go to break now. We'll deal with that when we come back.
business? You'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Global Reach, Winning in World Markets. I'm here with Mark Johnson and Charlie Kestenbaum of Sovereign Intelligence, LLC. We're talking about setting up a protective regime for our computers. And Mark, you were about to start when we went to break.
Sure. I think to complement what Charlie's already talked about in terms of addressing, you know, the strategy involved, some of the practicality of it is, you know, if you go and buy a computer and burn it every time that you're in and out of, you know, doing business with China or any other parts of the world, you're spending a lot of money, you're wasting a lot of time, and you still risk communicating whatever you have in terms of intellectual property on that computer and that computer not being completely destroyed. So there's other ways to do this. So the other ways to do this is actually to shore up your own IP address and have that monitored and have the key terms that you are dealing with and addressing, whether it's technology or certain descriptions of IP, during a negotiation or a meeting, and have that monitored live over the internet. And we
How do you do that?
We provide a service that allows for us to go on and monitor through access to the internet in various parts of the world what is being communicated over, whether it's through emails, because someone has given access for us to help them in terms of cybersecurity, or who is looking at that person's company from other nodes within the internet. And we have a special technology that we harness in order for us to do that. But it's not really much more than in much more sophisticated other than monitoring what's going on based upon key terms that are being talked about. And we can often help clients with particular counterintelligence briefings and other types of things and threat awareness to let them know how things are being done, how technology is changing, and what potential threats whomever they're talking to may be using or what types of technologies they may be using in order to get information and actually commit corporate espionage. Many countries don't have laws against espionage, so it's a wild, wild west out there.
Wonderful. So, you say that sovereign intelligence, on your website you say this, that you offer 80% solutions for leveling the playing field for global investors in terms of risk assessment, penetration testing, and I guess the monitoring systems you were just talking about. What do you mean by an 80% solution?
Well, I'll start this and let Charlie finish it off, but I think what we're trying to communicate to our clients is that there's a comprehensive approach to addressing the threat. You've got to address it within the cyber intelligence community, and you also have to address it within the human intelligence world. And so our solutions are designed to provide people really the best comprehensive look at information that they need to make better decisions, whether it's mitigating risk, tracking down people that that they're doing business with, and getting a better check and link analysis done on death CPA concerns or what have you. But out of that, our solutions are designed to look at things comprehensively and do the very, very best we can to help our clients make better decisions.
So give us an example. For example, that case I mentioned, the Dubai financial institution that was interested in investing in the Eastern European property development firm. What did you do there?
Oh, this is Charlie. Yeah, let me give you a sense as to where these two very, very different intelligence operation methods overlap and where they complement. Okay, we mentioned this specifically about banking in the Middle East. I had a client that was a private equity group, and they were looking at investing in the banking sector in the Middle East region. The stock markets were growing, the companies were making a lot of profits, and a lot of Western investors were starting to diversify their portfolios into the BRICS and the developing nations and the BEMS and all of the initials that you know about. So they gave me three names of three different banks that they were looking at investing in, and they had obtained, through a variety of sources, a vast amount of data. Cyber data and internet data and mathematical analysis, you know, quantitative analysis of stock prices and share values and 10-year averages and trading capabilities and so forth. And the end result was that all three were recommended as investment vehicles. The client came to me and said, is there something that's not here that I need to know? Some human asset intelligence source that you can identify that might be able to tell me something that's not easily available through all the other electronic sources that we've tapped into. And so I looked into it and immediately realized that one of the banks that he was looking at was about to be declared bankrupt. Now, this was not public knowledge. It was not in the data. The data showed a 10-year stock price analysis that was very attractive. But what we knew was I had a friend who was the head of audit at a competing bank. And he had just actually told me that bank was about to go bankrupt because of inside crooked deals that senior management within the bank were lending money to clients knowing that it was not going to be repaid and that it would be written off, and the bank would then have a balance sheet that would have a very negative view on it at some point when it became public knowledge. That's exactly what happened, and I told the client not to invest in that bank. They did not. And within a month, the bank was declared bankruptcy. The government had to take it over and bail it out, and it took them 5 years before that bank was solvent again.
Wow.
And had they invested at that bank, they would have lost most of their money or certainly not made any at the same time. So that's an example where having a human source inside an organization or an entity will be able to provide you with an insight that is critical to making the right business decision, whether it's investing or not investing, whether it's going in or not going in. That's the kind of it's a real-life example that actually happened a few years ago.
When I work with clients, I tell them it's looking for the alligators under the water.
Exactly.
So what did happen with that $30 million cyber fraud problem?
Well, it's a good question. We typically don't give all the answers away when we address it, but I can tell you this, is that in tracking that asset down,
what was the situation? Because I know you've got a bit of a case on your website.
Yeah, so as we have talked about before, it really involved doing a couple different things in tracking down data that we were able to discover within the Internet that led us to evidence describing what had actually happened, how the accounts were spearfished, how things were exploited, and the cyber entity that was behind everything. And
how did they lose the $30 million in the first place?
Well, it turned out that based upon someone getting access in a spear phishing campaign, which is a fraudulent representation of being someone else, right, and then pretending that you're that person and helping someone make bad decisions. In this case, a bad actor was able to get a hold of a login and password from another company, pretend that they were that company, tell the originator of the account that you need to change your bank account information because we have, you know, we've changed our account, and the money needs to now go to this new bank account. So without doing due diligence, the company went ahead and sent their multiple millions of dollars worth of sources into this new bank account, thinking everything was fine.
So how did you guys track it down?
Well, we tracked it down by using some of our resources within the Internet to find data on how logins and passwords from both companies were literally sitting out in the public domain of the Internet. And by finding that information, we were able to determine who was exposed from both sides of these companies and where the leaks were. And once we were able to determine that, we tracked that back into finding out actually who was responsible for doing that and looking for that kind of information within the Internet.
When you say our passwords are sitting out in the public domain of the Internet, how is that? How does that happen? Because I think our listeners would be really interested to know. And that's the first part of the question. And I understand our listeners wouldn't have the capability of tracking down their funds if something happens to them, but what are a couple of steps they can take to protect themselves in the first place?
Sure. Well,
first, why are our passwords in public domain?
Sure. So if you think of the Edward Snowden instance, he was a system administrator and an analyst with extraordinary access to inside information about what was going on within NSA. In the same way, you have systems administrators which often have extraordinary access to passwords and logins and information, and that data about those passwords and logins, et cetera, is often stored on Excel spreadsheets and other types of documents. And often those documents get leaked into the public domain of the Internet. And how that happens is through people using peer-to-peer software that are not necessarily aware of the risks involved. And if that information then gets spilled out into the peer-to-peer world and it's now in the public domain, and you have bad actors that are searching for just that kind of information so they can conduct a cyber exploitation.
So if I'm storing a list of my various passwords on a spreadsheet in Dropbox, somebody can access that?
Not necessarily. Dropbox is still part of the HTTP protocol and should be encrypted, and there's different ways in which you can do that. However, the way we were able to determine in this case, we described how the information was passed back and forth, was that it was inadvertently leaked into the peer-to-peer world, which doesn't necessarily afford the same types of encryption and is replete with malware. And so often the malware takes over and takes advantage of accessing information and pulling that back out into the public domain of the peer-to-peer world inadvertently. And so we caution our clients to make sure that they're not putting those types of pieces of information and data all in one folder, and that they plug their holes and have their own employees and their businesses to not use peer-to-peer software because of the malware and the exposure in the public domain of that kind of information. So there's a lot of solutions to these things, but it's an educational process, and a lot of folks that don't have the the desire to figure out all the nitty-gritty things you have to do to solve these problems. But we offer that, and we try to find those solutions on behalf of our clients.
We've got to go to break again. Believe it or not, we've just hit the end of another segment. When we come back, I want you to give us some examples of other cyber tools that we can use to enhance our decision-making capabilities and how you use that for clients, and also how we define cyber intelligence in this era of big data and cloud computing. But we got to go to break, so we'll do that when we get back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Hi, welcome back to the third section of Global Reach. I'm here with my guests, Mark Johnson and Charlie Kestenbaum of Sovereign Intelligence, and we are talking about cyber intelligence in this era of big data and cloud computing. How do you define it, Mark?
Sure. So part of understanding big data right now, everybody's talking about it, seems to be, you know, you push this button and you get your big data and everything is solved, right? That's what people are thinking about when they think of harvesting lots and lots of information, and then all that is going to, you know, somehow provide the right decision. And cloud computing, right? Cloud computing is no more than just establishing a network that makes it more efficient for people to share information. And there's lots of different examples of that cropping up with great technologies. Amazon has a great capability as well. So all of those different actors that are trying to get information that we've described as our clientele, the international business community, law firms, advisory groups, are looking towards big data and a more efficient way to share information and more to get better intelligence. And so when we talk about cyber intelligence in the era of these things that are fast coming, and I anticipate things to change even faster within the next year or so, is the ability to take that information and put it in the right places to define it, siphon it, filter it, and really address what the questions are at the heart of the problem. What we're seeing is a lot of companies are so good at pulling together large, vast amounts of data that they've actually missed what is really at stake. And that's, you know, the end client making a decision based upon the risks that they face in business every day. And so what our goal is to come alongside clients and say, we have access to big data, and we can get information fast, and we can collaborate with a lot of people very, very quickly so that you can make a better decision right away. And so our, you know, cyber intelligence piece, because of our access, you know, within the parts of the Internet that I've described, does just that.
You also talk on your website about helping clients make ethical decisions. What are you talking about there? What are you aiming at?
Yeah, good question. I think the ethical approach to doing business, you know, wherever we are, involves maintaining our integrity, which means that we're telling the truth about what we're doing. What we found, and Charlie can corroborate this, is, you know, the better the clients maintain their level of integrity in doing business, the better the business is going to go, right? The better the money is going to flow, the better the representation of the United States across various global markets is going to go. And so what we want to do is, as we approach doing good business intelligence collection, is we want to make sure, number one, that we're doing it ethically, right? That we're not breaking any rules, that we're not going behind into places that are non-public domain getting information. So we want to maintain that for our own approach. And that's a matter of sovereign intelligence integrity. But we also want to encourage clients to do that for themselves. And so we partner with clients and advise them on some of the pitfalls that they might see, for example, the foreign practice act issues that come up.
I'm sorry, you just got blurred on that last. You said, for example, and then you just kind of blurred out on what that was. Like we have technical problem.
Sorry, so for example, when clients are dealing with foreign corrupt practice act issues, they're worried about the supply chain making decisions that might affect their bottom line, which might affect their own compliance with that particular act. And so what we want to do is we want to encourage our clients and their own supply chain to be aware of those pitfalls, in particular the graft and the bribery issues that seem to be replete, especially within emerging market areas.
Hmm. So those are the legal issues. God, I've been covering Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, I think, since the 1970s, pre-internet, certainly. What about reputational risk and brand reputational risk? I mean, we seem to be in a world where reputation trolls try to do serious attacks on corporate brands and on corporate reputation. What do you do to protect that?
Well, that involves monitoring your brand across social media, the blogging world, right? If you think of the different things that a Twitter or a tweet has in terms of responsibility to shape an argument or a position or a reputation perspective of a certain company. Companies are doing a good job of finding ways that they can then monitor those types of folks that seem to be leveraging a negative perspective on a particular company or client, whatever the campaign is. But what we're trying to do is help clients do an even better job, and that really comes down to providing a fast cyber intelligence monitoring capability of their particular brand, not just across social media and the Twitter accounts and Facebooks and the certain blogs, but across the other parts of the Internet where those conspiracies often start. And if you can get out ahead of the game in the same way that we try to do that positively for our intelligence clients, in the same way for the brand protection, we want to do that.
Let me give you, this is Charlie, let me give you one quick example. When I served in the U.S. government in the embassies overseas, we had one American company in a major defense sector that was trying to sell to a Middle Eastern country. And every time they went in to see that Middle Eastern country's government, the government knew what they were going to offer and talk about, terms and details, specific.
Wow.
Right? Before they walked in the room, the client already knew what was going to be offered. How was that possible? So they came to us and said, somebody's hacking us in a way we can't figure out who's doing it. So we did a little investigation and we found that it was the French government. French intelligence agency was aiding one of its manufacturers by applying its assets to hack into and monitor this American company. And so they were passing everything they gained along to the French company before the Americans even gave their offer to the Middle Eastern client.
And so, they were mad at the NSA.
And in the end, what we ended up doing, which was very unique, I'd never seen this in 25 years of service, we actually were authorized by Washington, empowered to give this American firm an office in the embassy so that they could operate under the protection, the physical and cyber protection of the U.S. government, so that their communications were not automatically and systematically being hacked into and monitored. And it worked out pretty well. The American firm did end up winning the $70 billion major contract with this Middle East government, but it was not easy. And it was an example where a foreign government was, I mean, you talk about Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, here you have a competitor government using all of its intelligence assets to spy on American firms and to disadvantage the American firms because it was in their national interest to do so.
Have you seen much of this?
Oh, every day, literally.
Now, if we can't get the U.S. government to help us, are there some things that our listeners can do? And remember, we've got a range of listeners here from Fortune 100 to single-person startups. So,
Right. Well, everybody has a different profile and a different degree of risk. Individuals are much less likely to be targeted by serious criminal elements or foreign government elements. Imagine the foreign government isn't actually a criminal element in its behavior. So what do you do then? It's more, the targeting is more, the larger the contract, the larger the business deal, the more likely to be targeted in that manner by such a malicious effort, rather than simply people trying to steal your password. That's a very different ballgame.
Speaking of small companies, I have a research partner in Canada, and they're a small company, not huge. But they looked at their phone bill one day, and there were $80,000 in international telecommunications charges. Some Eastern European group had hacked into their phone, racked up the charges, and in Canada, phone isn't protected. They were liable for the full phone bill. They did manage to negotiate it down to the phone company's charges, but it was still $45,000, which is a big whack out of a small company's profits. Is that something sovereign intelligence could protect against?
Yes. And the way in which we've described some of our monitoring capability is kind of a process. So it all starts with a cyber risk assessment. So we would take a client, for example, like that, and what you would do is you would take their company, their corporate PII, and we would do searches within the Internet to determine what their footprint is and their exposure is within the Internet. And with that data, we would be able to determine who may be looking at that company that may not have any business doing so. And wherever that happens within the world, we'd be able to interpret that, understand an IP address, understand potentially who that person is or that entity, and then begin to plug those holes with various investigative tools. The process starts with a cyber risk assessment, but then continues with a monitoring system. So if that client in Canada wanted to know if their information that is public is being looked at, then we can begin to set up a monitoring system to monitor that particular data across the various domains of the Internet, surface, deep web, as well as peer-to-peer. And that monitoring system would then allow you to know, before the exploitation happens, who actually may be conspiring to do a bad act, to actually commit a cyber exploitation. And that would significantly reduce the chances of that type of event happening.
We've been talking a lot about external threats. But we have mentioned the Snowden effect. How do we protect ourselves from employees who are Snowden wannabes?
I think you've asked the most difficult question I think the entire intelligence community is grappling with. Everybody's coming up with behavioral monitoring software. There are all kinds of different algorithms involved in trying to detect or predict what people are going to do on the Internet in their own time or during their office hours, et cetera. And I think that's the million-dollar question. The way that we would approach it is not that much different than what I've described in terms of monitoring again. And again, deciding to build a strategic relationship with that company in order to observe, detect aberrant behavior, which may include using peer-to-peer software. And so you look at Bradley Manning case and you look at other cases that are out there and you can determine that these people were actually using peer-to-peer software to share information and to share movies and movies and other types of things that happen that are often shared in those spaces. But that's one thing that most companies are not doing is determine who's using that kind of software and what is being leaked through those particular nodes of the Internet. And we can help clients solve that.
But we're also in an era where pretty much everybody, if they don't have a light portable computer or they're not doing peer-to-peer, they've got a tablet, they've got a smartphone. How do you solve the bring-your-own-device, the BYOD problem? And also, we're supposed to be working 24 hours a day, particularly if we're dealing in international markets, so there's a legit reason to be taking data home.
Sure, and there are ways.
4 a.m., you can often find me on the phone with Germany and then the next minute with Singapore. It's a great time of day for both of them.
That's true. And part of our solution set is to provide the right consultation and right tools to develop secure communications between various nodes within the internet. And there are lots of software companies that are developing this now. You look at Circle Phone and or Silent Circle Phones and these other groups that are coming together with these great types of technologies. Listen, I mean, all the entire technology community is trying to find ways to shore up and secure communication. Business has to be done. You need to call Germany. You need to call Singapore the next minute. And the technology is there to set up the right types of secure and encrypted communications. And we happen to be able to offer the right solutions for doing that. And we want to make sure that our own clients and our own communications back and forth as we serve our clients internationally, that our own communications and reports are made secure in that world. So we have a vested interest in making sure that our clients are also aware of those kinds of capabilities.
So let me ask you, let me turn this around. Suppose you're working for a firm. I'm an employee. I encounter something in my own firm that's deeply unethical and possibly illegal. What should I be doing, particularly if the firm has a lot of these protocols in place?
Well, there are reporting mechanisms that are in place, and the policies from each company are going to be different on how you address, you know, those types of behaviors. And so we typically work closely with general counsel in supporting various investigations to determine what actually has happened. Where we typically get called in is something's happened, and we want to track down the information that will provide us the evidence to build a case either to exonerate this person or to address, you know, whatever the issues are that need to be addressed. And so we can often support within the investigation process ways to get information about what has been leaked. And by collecting that kind of information, we can provide that back into the general counsel and the leadership within our clientele, and then they usually take the investigation to the next place. And what we're not doing is we're not going in and hacking into other computers and getting intelligence that we don't need to get a hold of, but we're actually just supporting an actual investigation process.
Let me ask you, before we were talking about conspiracies to attack a company's external conspiracies to attack a company's reputation. But when you monitor for that, can you distinguish between a genuine expression of customer frustration, customer problems, versus a concerted attack on one of your clients? And if you can, how would you help your client address that?
Well, I think there is a definite distinction between, you know, someone who's just providing a gripe and wanting to vent a little bit, and that's normal. I think that that's probably healthy. It doesn't need to be, you know, stopped by our processes. But what we're seeing is the bad actors, the ones that are truly trying to conduct an exploitation, have a different signature. They're doing things differently on the internet. They're acting in a different capacity. They're collaborating. They're exchanging code. They're conspiring, and the language and the acts that are leading up to that are very, very different than a normal person just chatting about what they want to talk about. In particular, the difference is having to do with where they're doing it. And if you're going to do it in terms of preparing to conduct an exploitation, you're usually going to be involved in the deep web and or the peer-to-peer world first. If you're simply providing a complaint, you want to blog about whatever you're dealing with, whatever company you're upset with, then you're usually going to do it on a social media platform or a popular blog. And so those signatures are often very different. And we just provide information to clients and help them determine, you know, the best use of the lead that we can provide, and then do their own policies to help them determine what they can do with that information.
I was thinking, if a company has an unsolved problem, very often it's the customer service area where their customer service can be really bad. Can you point that out to your clients and say you need to solve this, or are you really just looking for the criminal activity?
Well, we're definitely looking for the criminal activity based upon the client's request in that case, so I'm definitely not looking at normal customer dissatisfaction in any capacity. I mean, we're
we're not going to, you know, try to solve all of these various types of gripes or complaints and things. What we're really looking at is collecting information, providing it back to the client so they can decide on what to do with it. I think that every company wants to protect their brand, and they want to make sure they can address whatever folks have in terms of their own dissatisfaction with the client. But what we're really interested in our capacity is to solve this hard to find, you know, bits and pieces and information, and that typically has to do with bad actors. And that's where our focus is.
So, Charlie, on the human intelligence side, what's the most important things, the most important techniques you pulled out of your service with the Department of Commerce that our customers, our listeners should know about?
Yeah, several things. One is the right sources. Obviously, that's pretty simple stuff, but hard to do. So, for example, finding human sources of information, disgruntled employees, former employees, people who are not happy with the situation or who have some axe to grind or some personal vendetta to offer. I'll give you a direct personal example. I worked at a company some years ago that was being taken over by an investor group. And the investor group did all their homework, all the numbers and the spreadsheets and all the documentation and the projections and everything. They never actually came in and talked to any of us who were working at the company. Had they come in, they would have found out pretty quickly from one or another of us that the two owners were fighting with each other, which is probably why the company was available to be sold, that there was all kinds of scandals that were about to break in terms of criminal charges against the company for behaving in a manner that was illegal or unethical, and that was going to cause the company to lose a lot of very bad reputation in public. None of this was in any documents or data or numbers that were reviewed. And the investor did buy the company. Had they asked me, I would have said, you're out of your mind to buy this company at this time, at this price. But they did, and they inherited a whole series of lawsuits and disputes and a broken-up partnership that followed within the next 12 months. So the answer to that was ask somebody the right questions. First, find the right people who have the information you're looking for, and then figure out how to get it from them.
So we got 2 minutes to the end of the show, believe it or not. What are the two most important things our listeners can do to improve their cybersecurity and their human security beyond the citadels of our own companies?
Sure, Tay. So,
simple question for 2 minutes.
Yeah, very simply, and a broad question. Really, the solution is to become aware of the threats against your own company in terms of the cyber exploitations that are happening. You don't have to look further than Target and Neiman Marcus and every other entity that's out there in terms of the damage that is being done and the CEO's responsibility in those cases. So each company needs to become aware of that. And we can help provide that. Signature solutions, part of that involves cyber risk assessments. So you can do that very, very quickly. The other part is to shore that up and provide a monitoring service so that they can actually go forward and monitor and understand, you know, what the threats are going forward. I think the other side of it in terms of human intelligence is to be aware of the fact that there are lots of folks with lots of information out there that are using it for bad purposes. And we want to get ahead of the game, as Charlie mentioned, to have the right people in place that are trusted, that are vetted, that are non-interoperable, that are able to provide great sources of information for us. And I think clients that tap into good corporate intelligence companies trust them to go off and get information for them so they can provide, you know, the right risk assessments for their own clients. And I think as clients, as we found, are educated more and more on the tools of the trade within the cyber intelligence world and the human intelligence world, they're aware of those, and they have established relationships with good companies such as ours and others that are out there that have very good reputations. They can do a much better job in solving their own clients' problems and help them make
terrific.
Better decisions.
Listen, I have to tell you, we are out of time. So thank you both for being on this show. Next week, we're going to take another crack at ways that our audience can protect their company and brand reputation, but looking with more of an emphasis on Latin America, Africa, and emerging market employee screening. We'll have David Robillard, founder of MultiLatin, calling in from Mexico City. So please join us. Just very quick, Mark, how can our listeners find you?
You can go on our website, sovereign-llc.com. You can telephone us at 703-663-6689, or you can contact myself at mark@sovereign-llc.com.
That's wonderful. Listen, I think this was fascinating. You've also got me good and scared. But
I appreciate it.
But I think our listeners have gotten a lot of information out of this that they can use. So I just, for all of you, on behalf of myself and my guests, Mark Johnson and Charlie Kestenbaum of Sovereign Intelligence LLC, we wish you great success in the next week in extending your global reach and protecting your brand reputation. Tune in next week. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.